This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho, featuring inspirational and fascinating personal stories of people from all corners of the globe who are now in St. Louis. We'll take a look at the U.S. through newcomers' eyes, get some insight into world history and cultures, and maybe learn something about ourselves. Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Welcome to Stories of New Americans. Tonight I'm joined by Nasia Meyer, who is originally from Croatia. Thank you. Welcome. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And you are a teacher and a poet and an author of Croatian language books. You've got a very prolific background. But we're going to talk about all that stuff, but first let's sort of set the scene for listeners that may not be familiar with where Croatia is on the map. You just returned from Croatia, so it's fresh in your memory. But can you tell us where Croatia is geographically, what countries it borders?
Yeah.
Just to set the scene.
Yeah. Croatia is located in southern central Europe. It's mainly Mediterranean country, and the country it borders with on the northwest is Slovenia, on north mm-hmm. is Hungary, and then east on the east Serbia, Kosovo, mm-hmm. and Montenegro in the south, and then the coast, Adriatic coast, is shared by Italy. But mostly it is in Croatia. And the border with Bosnia and Herzegovina mm-hmm. is considered almost not a border because politically it has not yet been settled. And so many people feel that both countries are their homes, Croats and Muslims to the lesser extent, Serbs. Mm-hmm. So it's not a sharp border there.
Mm. Okay. But, you know, Croatia is independent now, but sometimes in the past it wasn't because of all these different countries it bordered and all the other historical events that happened. There was a lot of movement and other control. But, you know, Croatia has always kept its culture and language and how do you think Croatia was able to keep its own distinct identity in the face of all these centuries of colonization and other countries trying to take control? How were they able to do that?
Yes, it is. When we look historically, there was a larger territory than what Croatia is now when mm-hmm. they first settled. But the northern part, in the northern parts, were Germanic tribes and Hungarian tribes lived. Mm-hmm. They were more assimilated. And the location of the first kingdom of Croatia was in Dalmatia in the south.
Okay.
And from there, the idea of having a country on their own, and the church helped too later when they accepted Christianity. Mm-hmm. They were the first among Slavs that became Christians.
Really?
Yes. And they the fact that they have their own state mm-hmm. that was very early on in the mm-hmm. history among very first European mm-hmm. today European countries, mm-hmm. but the first that they had their own state among Slavs and first they became Christians. Yeah,
and that was
something that they were very proud of. Mm-hmm. And another fact, it's legend and not a legend because they found that in the historical archives that Byzantium, the emperor Heraclius invited Croats who lived then far away from present-day Croatia mm-hmm. to come to his country to fight Avars. And Croatians came. So they felt that they were not invaders mm-hmm. as other barbaric tribes were, but they had this invitation to settle, and they used that to keep the dream for independence mm. legitimate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Croatia, as people may know, was part of Yugoslavia for 40 or 50 years.
Yes.
And you know, Yugoslavia literally means land of the South Slavs, right? So yes. It consists of Croatia and Serbia and Bosnia and several other countries. Looking back, was it a good thing to make the country of Yugoslavia, to bring all these countries together? Was that a good thing after
Yes,
the war,
at that time it was a very good idea, and it was not something that suddenly happened. Throughout 18th century, 19th century too, there was a movement among Croatians and other Slavic people in their own countries for some kind of unity. And we called our movement Illyrian movement because present-day Croatia was in Illyria, province of Illyria in Roman times, the northern part. And then also because Russia was Slavic and it was such a powerful country, and then also Poland was very successful, even though their history was turbulent as well, but they were prominent in European arts and history. And so they felt that if they aligned themselves with them only on the basis of language, and in a far-fetched way, maybe as people, because that's not very clear how much of the Slavic origin each Slavic country has now. Bulgarians certainly are not all Slavs. And you see in the features of so many Slavic people, Tatar, Oriental features because of the invasion of different tribes during the history.
You mentioned linguistic or language. And in the days of Yugoslavia, the language was referred to as Serbo-Croatian, which I guess Serbian and Croatian. How similar are the Serbian and Croatian languages, or Bosnian language for that matter? Are they pretty much the same?
They are only in understanding that you understand. And that is also true for Danish and Swedish language. They can understand, but that doesn't make a language the same. You can basically all Slavic. That's why I used to tell my students studying Croatian, it's not a waste of your time because we are such a small nation, but you will arm yourself with knowledge of all other Slavic languages. For as you know, you studied Slavic languages too. That helps. So that way they are similar. And they were more different before Yugoslavia was formed. And now again, since they're independent, they have done some studies with students and read a Serbian text. And I was surprised that the children said, "What is that? We don't understand. What language is that?" And in my time, we could tell that they're different, but we could easier understand each other.
Yeah, I've heard that. They're becoming more different, and it might be partly political, I guess, right?
It must be political too, but also to the your ear. We don't listen to Serbian news or some other. But Croatian and Serbian is more similar. And you mentioned Bosnian, which became language only after this conflict, because every nation has a right to call a language their own. But that before was not such a thing. While Serbian and Croatian were always called Serbian and Croatian, and I looked at my documents of my school records. Sometimes it's called only Croatian. Sometimes Hrvatsko-Srpski. In Croatia, a word Croatian was the first. In Serbian.
Oh, really?
Yes, that's how they did it.
Well, one difference, I think, is that Croatian uses the Latin alphabet and Serbian uses
the
Cyrillic.
Latin. But we, during Yugoslavia, in the second grade, we were taught Cyrillic as well. And then depending on the teacher, some teachers wanted both. But soon after that, we didn't use it. But we still all know that,
Now, the president of Yugoslavia for many years was Tito, Josip Broz Tito. And
For life, he was the
For life, yeah. And I guess you grew up under Tito. We're going to get to your story in a few minutes.
Yes.
But Tito, I mean, Yugoslavia was a very special case. Neither Warsaw Pact nor NATO, neither East nor West.
Yeah, non-aligned.
Non-aligned, socialist, but not really communist. What was that all about?
I think that Tito was very shrewd, and he used the position, geographical and also political, after the war, that he pitted one side against the others, the West and to the East. And he was in good terms with Russia prior to the rift in 1949, mm-hmm. with Stalin. And he actually grew up in Soviet Union so much that his Croatian was very problematic for many people. Is he an imposter?
Really?
Because he spoke with strong accent, foreign accent that sounded Russian, but also in Kaikavian area where he grew up, there is some possibility it is because his mother was Slovenian and his father was Croat. But in the area where we have this special dialect. So he did that very, very well. And then he was megalomaniac in a way that so many dictators are. Yeah. And he wanted to be a little Stalin in that area. He didn't want Russia to Soviet Union to dictate. Yeah,
it's incredible that he was able to distance himself from the Soviet bloc as well as he did.
Yeah, we thought, I remember that time, I was in first grade and I remember when that happened, and our parents prepared us for the worst.
Wow.
And first there was a word that the children would be evacuated or we are going to France, of all countries, I don't know. And then also atomic bomb, that is. Yeah, that was. And then after that, he got more, how would I say, freedom to... That was good for the West that he parted with Soviet Union. And then he got more, I wouldn't say permission, but anyway, praise going to India and Africa, Indonesia, Egypt, and being buddy with all those...
the non-aligned countries.
And as children, we would be sent from school and go to wave to different people, Haile Selassie from Ethiopia, and so forth, Nehru and
so
from
these
Egypt.
Leaders would come and you would... The children would welcome.
Yes, and people were very proud that our small country, Yugoslavia, is known to everybody in the world because of Tito and because of his involvement in the... But at the same time, so many families at home had a different story that you wanted independence. We always want independence, Slovenia, Croatia, and that was... And I remember elderly people, very old, probably age my age now, who would visit my grandparents. One man would always say in a way that you couldn't really arrest him for saying that. He said, like... there was a Roman Empire and Greek before that, and there were all the big and Turkish and Austro-Hungary, and they have all gone to nothing, and this will pass too. This will pass, mark my words. And he would go down the street and say, this will pass too, just wait. So people expected. Mm-hmm. In some ways, not everybody, but somebody who was thinking about something else.
We're almost time for our first break, so let's take a break. But when we come back, I want to ask you about life under Tito in general, because I've heard mostly good but some bad things about life in Yugoslavia, especially as compared to Warsaw Pact countries.
Yes.
So let's take a short break and we'll come back and we'll pick up that thread. You're listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL. Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by Arnell's Hardwoods. For all of your laminate and hardwood flooring needs, call them at 314-397-3252.
Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by the Indoor Comfort Team. For all of your heating and cooling needs, call the Indoor Comfort Team at 314-230-9542.
This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.
Welcome back. We're talking with Nasia Meyer, and I was just going to ask about growing up under Tito, because I believe in comparison with other Eastern Bloc countries in the 40s, 50s, 60s, there was a lot more personal freedom in Yugoslavia. That's what I've heard. Is that correct? Freedom to travel, freedom of speech, freedom of religion.
Yes, it was more relatively, yes, speaking compared to the other countries. But in effect, it was not that way. Let's take travel, for example. Not everyone could get a passport and go. And the other restrictions were made simply by not allowing to take money out of the country, only very small money. Before I came to United States, I was in England twice. My parents sent me. And you could only 10 pounds take for the whole summer that I went. So the only place you could go to if you had relatives or if you had somebody who would sponsor you. So this English couple that travel around the world befriended my brother, who is older than me, who wanted to go to England, and they would come and spend summers in our large house where we had a little apartment on top. And then for that, one summer my brother went, then I went to them, to Birmingham, England. Oh. And so that is how we did that, that you couldn't travel, because you cannot go abroad without having, but say, $15. Yes. And so that was with that. And requirement to be successful, was it to that you have to join the party? Depending
the
what
Communist
you
party.
Worked, yeah, Communist Party, depending what your field of work. If you were in education or in law, definitely you had to join. Because both in education and through law, you influence law and you influence a lot of people, young people in education. So that was something that they had to watch. And then also about nationality, you couldn't stress very much, say that you are Croatian in something. You avoid that was a private.
Were you Yugoslav? Considered have
no, we didn't say Yugoslav. Some people did. I think more Muslims. They did more in Bosnia and somewhere. I think in Croatia they did some, but probably the people connected with the army who were stationed or lived in Croatia. In a region that I lived, it was mainly Croatians. As a child, I did not know there is anything else. We only knew for Christmas, for example, at the time when we take our Christmas tree down, my mother would say, oh, maybe a Serbian family, we take ours. You put on the curb because they start on Epiphany when ours ends.
Speaking of Christmas, were there any restrictions about religion under Yugoslavian rule?
Yes. On Christmas, we on Saturdays went to school and our parents work. But on Christmas also, it was a working day. And you couldn't miss the school. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if somebody would attend church, I guess if you're a member of the Communist Party, you couldn't or shouldn't be a Christian or a believer,
yes,
right?
Yes, right.
But if for non-party members, was it acceptable to attend church services?
Yes, that they could go. But in my case, somehow, you know, some people are born with more inclined to be spiritual and to like religion. As a child, I really like what my grandmother taught us. But I wanted to go to school. I'm Roman Catholic and go to school as some children, quite a few number went. And I went a few times, and I was always late. And the priest said, "You are too late. You better don't come anymore because you disrupt." And what happened to me, my brother changed the clock all the time. So I don't know. I have never figured out, did my father ask him, because he didn't want to be the villain to say that. And my brother, who was 10 years older, did that. And so then when I came here, I had to go to catechism to be able to marry in the church.
Oh,
before that, I was the only one who was baptized and knew everything about that, but I didn't have the sacraments. Yeah.
When did your brother confess to that? When did he finally fess up?
But he was a great friend, a Franciscan from Bosnia, and he met my husband. He took him all over the monasteries in Bosnia on a horseback. So that was kind of a, you know, it is things in life and in politics don't work, you know, kind of in a sharp way.
Yeah.
They're all like that.
Yeah.
Well, forbidden things.
Yeah, let's talk about you now. You were born in the city of Split, you said,
yes.
On the Adriatic Sea.
Yes.
What was your childhood like?
Wonderful. That was the best part. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whenever something bad happens to me, I find comfort. Being first born in such a beautiful part of the country, and with the parents who loved and respected each other, that I don't remember ever having any conflict, not even a raised voice. And their marriage was an arranged marriage, one of the last that they did. My mother was 14 and my father was 24 when they got engaged. Yeah.
Arranged marriage, was that common in those days?
It is. It was somewhere in a very isolated in the country, and also through prominent families, they did that. And I think that is a very good idea. Nobody knows their children as well as their parents and wishes them that well.
Yeah. I've heard that arranged marriages often are more successful than love marriages in some parts of the world.
Yes. Yes.
What type of work did your father do when you were growing up?
My father, when he was engaged to my mother, he was studying law in Zagreb. Mm-hmm. And after he got his doctorate in jurisprudence, and he got the exams to be a judge, because that's how they do. You go to additional training. Mm-hmm. They married, and he was a judge in the provincial towns of Dalmatia, because that was the kind of procedure that the young people had to go, medical doctors and the lawyers. So when I was born, they were on the island of Huar. That was the third better place than they were before. And then they hoped after that to be in Split. But the war, Second World War came, and my father resigned to be a judge. Was for him an impossible profession, because you had to, the party would decide, and he would have to sign, and he resigned. He was so lucky that he was such a he was an expert in law, and the new government needed him, and he was not somebody who caused problems, political or emigrated. Mm-hmm. And he was advisor to the officials in the government of our county and our city, because there were the communists who had no education, bright people, but shipyard workers, carpenters, shoemakers, for the most part. I think there was one who was a lawyer like my father, but not as an expert as he was. And then he was assigned to a very important task, and that is how to do the divide housing, what to do. First of all, our country was devastated, especially the South, by bombing.
In the war.
Both German and allies did it, every government, and our neighborhood in particular, because the headquarters of the government were there. And then a lot of people came from the countryside to work in the cities. Many people were killed. Many people went abroad. Many political refugees left the country. So it was in turmoil. And I'm so proud that my father, despite of that, could have, as many of them, assigned a very good apartment for himself. We lived in an apartment where you always lived that belonged to my grandparents.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I don't remember even, I don't think anybody in our city was like that. And he had to have a chauffeur, which he declined to. He always walked to his work. Yeah.
And how was your school life? You went to a public school there?
We didn't have private school. They're all closed. All Catholic schools and all other public were closed, only public
schools. Was your school life pleasant? You have good memories?
Yes, it was nice. I like it because it was the same building that my grandfather. Mm-hmm. I would always, in the tradition, like my grandfather did there. Mm-hmm. And the same building. The first year we are divided just the way it was before the war when Catholics had Catholic schools, boys in one school and girl in the other. Mm-hmm. And in second grade, we all were together. And 8 years, we went in the same building. It used to be called 8-year school. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you go to gymnasium, to high school for 4 years.
I'm really curious. Do you remember when you were in high school how the United States and how the USSR were, I guess, depicted or described in your history books or by your teachers? Do you remember getting good or bad propaganda for either one?
We never had any kind of bad things that I remember about United States, about America.
About Soviet Union? Was there any good or bad?
Soviet Union.
Because you were kind of in the middle.
It was just at the beginning when I was small. Yeah. And after that, they stressed the difference, yes. We were closer to the arts and literature of Russia. We studied that more than American literature, I have to say that. But not bad things. And maybe because so many Croats were in United States from 100 years ago as well as the recent, yeah.
Did you study English in high school?
In grade school, we did in fifth grade. We started studying. But that was my generation. My brother's generation did not. They did Russian and French or German, but for us, in already 49, the same year that Stalin and Tito parted, you could English. Of course, you could, instead of English, you could French or German, but most opted for English, yes.
And how was Tito depicted in the school? Were there a picture of him in every classroom?
Yeah, always, yes, his his picture and sang songs about him, and he was always depicted as a Lyubichitsa Biela, which means white violet, a bird, a flower. And so that was in school, and always the book started with his pictures, the first picture. But we did not think that is something so. I mean, I want to say about my family, because at the same time, they talked about heroes from Croatian past.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I knew that there are other great people in Croatian history, not just that. But something that happened to me, I don't know if I'm taking time uselessly. When I went first time to England, and my aunt and uncle had friends who were journalists, husband and wife, liberal journalists who really admired communist Yugoslavia. And I was with them for 1 week in London, and they showed me the town, and the husband took me to a park and mentioned something about Irish people. And I we won't now talk about Irish. I did not know about Irish and conflict with Ireland much. But he asked me suddenly, do I like Tito? And I said, yes, I think he's okay, something like that. I said, and he said, and how about other people? Does everybody love him? I said, that's not true. Not everybody loves him. I hear some do, some don't. Mm-hmm. When I came back, that was reported to my aunt and uncle by the gentleman and his wife. And they said, we regret that you gave because you did something that was not good. Mm-hmm. You said that to us and brought shame to your country. And they were not an extremist. They're not even members of the party. So I very early on, I thought that the truth has to be somewhere else, that somebody who is in power writes the books that we are studying. And I was just so surprised how smart I was at that age.
How old were you then? Were you a teenager?
Yeah, maybe when I was even 10, 12 years that I thought. And my parents never told me even what nationality I was. First day of school, most of the children, when they asked them, they did not know what nationality. Only a Russian boy knew, and an Albanian girl said Albanian, Italian girl says she's Italian, and the rest of us, maybe we didn't know. I don't know. And next day when they say Hrvatica, that was a strange word that I had to repeat to myself all the way to school so I wouldn't forget the word.
Which means Croatian.
Croatian female.
Well, why don't we take our second break here, and then we're going to come back and talk about how you came to the United States.
Yes.
And all the things you've accomplished here. You're listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL 101.9.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL. Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you in part by Samim Afghan Restaurant, featuring traditional Afghan cuisine and conveniently located on Manchester Road in the Grove.
Stories of New Americans.
Brought to you by Hacking Law, for individuals who want to come and stay in the U.S. Hacking Law fights for immigrants every day. Visit them at hackingimmigrationlaw.com.
This is Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.
Welcome back. Nasia, was your childhood generally happy then in Croatia, Yugoslavia?
Yes. It was really wonderful living by the sea with grandparents in the same building and other relatives, and being able to walk to the sea and the mountains. Mosor was a mountain, the closest that our parents took them. They took us. They loved nature and the books they read to us before we went to sleep.
Your city was on the Adriatic Sea, and I was there. I had the chance to go there briefly, and I can remember how blue the water was. I've never seen anything like that before, how blue the water, Adriatic Sea was, beautiful.
Yeah, they said that is because of the mountains.
Really?
Then there's reflection, and also because of the rocks down and the sand.
What was your impression of the United States before you came? When you were, I guess, when you were a young person, did you, were there American movies or TV shows or what?
Yes, American movies were the best movies. We liked American movies. We had relatives in the United States. My grandmother, not from the after the Second World War, but from before, my grandmother's two brothers were, there are three brothers, two return and one stayed. And that was mainly in San Pedro, in a small town that was a suburb of Los Angeles. That was at that time mainly by populated by Croatians, Croats,
really?
By from the sea, seaside. So that is, and during the war, they help us, the Americans send the help, the food, and then the relatives close because we had things, but things broke, wore out during the war or perished in fire, and the factories were not in operation, so stores didn't have. So it was all very favorable. Yes. But I would have never come to United States, I don't think, especially not to settle. It was just a very strange
thing that happened to me.
It was economics, and not economics, my own economics, but the economics that my parents sent me to study at the University of Zagreb. I was more diligent than my sister, who was very close in age, less than 2 years younger than I. And at that time, Split didn't have university. The beginning was, but only law and chemistry, and we are not going to study that. Everything else in Zagreb. And so it was too expensive for two at the same time. So they thought that I can apply and get the scholarships. A new field of studies, economics, was developed. And I got the scholarship. And so I went to Zagreb to study. And I cried so much because I couldn't get straight A's that I was accustomed to. even to pass. And I was very, very upset. And I came home, and that summer, my brother, who was studying at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, after he finished law in Zagreb, he got a scholarship that he arranged by himself through somebody he met, a professor on the train, not through any government ways. And he met a young man who was from St. Louis, but because they are many Croatians in St. Louis, my brother had a lot of addresses to visit those people and no way to get there. He didn't have a car. So this young man, my future husband, Art Meyer, took him to Croatian houses that he visited, and he fell in love. Before he saw me, he fell in love with Croatian people, who are like Bosnians, very generous, very clean, have wonderful food and hospitality. And he liked that. So after a few years, my brother went back. And after that, Art came to Europe and we saw each other. And my family said, you take him to the museum and my sister will help in the kitchen. And I told him, and in the letters he started writing to me about my predicament. And then he proposed out of blue. So I came. And it is such an unusual coincidence that you invited me to speak here when in a few days I will celebrate a 6 years anniversary of my arrival to St. Louis. I arrived 1963.
60 years.
60 years.
Wow.
Yes, I arrived day after Halloween. And that was a symbolic for me day to tell me how many difference there is between my life and the life in United States. We drove, my husband picked me up in Chicago, and we drove to St. Louis. And I said, why those pumpkins? Why those cats? Why those witches? And he said what it is, and I still didn't understand what that was. Yeah. And then many, many more differences.
Wow. what were some of the other differences, like some of the cultural differences you noticed? Can you remember any?
Well, from the beginning, cars. We didn't have that many cars, private cars. If there are cars, then it was the cars were full of people because they are used for transportation. And I was just, I was shocked to see on highway only one driver or two drivers.
Yeah.
What a waste. What a waste. Huge cars and just, and also that the country is not as well populated as Europe. Even now, maybe in the countryside, there's some space. But here, there's for a long time, you don't see another house. And that, and the houses are made of wooden houses, and ours were, and bricks. We didn't have brick house or wooden. They're all stone or stucco or painted, over that. And then the meals when you eat, what do you eat? Coffee was completely, we had Turkish coffee.
So our coffee was probably very weak.
Yes, and tea was too strong.
Tea was just too strong.
So everything was upside down.
How was your English when you came here?
My English was more British, and because all our teachers had British accent, and I was in England twice, and I needed to improve vocabulary, and I remember that it took me a long time to get the humor. Johnny Carson, I couldn't understand why people are laughing. Said you could cry easier. Said thing you can grasp in foreign language easier than some subtle humor.
Did you think
that too?
I never thought about that, but it's true. Humor is very culture-based, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. Did you connect with other Croatians living in St. Louis?
They came to visit me and took me to functions, weddings, and tamburice they have, they did some. But at the time, I mainly was with my husband's family and his colleagues. And later I noticed that I had more in common with foreigners from elsewhere than from with my compatriots, because they all were already settled and integrated in American life. And I couldn't share my loneliness and my disappointments in some ways. But with when I started studying, taking classes right away with foreign students.
And then how did your professional life develop? You became a teacher and a
I became a teacher, but it was not easy. It was not easy because I had children, and I wanted to be a first wife and mother to those children. And in order that they speak Croatian correctly and they are completely bilingual, I had to be with them, no babysitters. And so then I would take classes only after they went to first grade and during that period. And then I would take classes different whatever they offered, because they already gave me a lot of credit for 2 years of economics. It was a very much involved. It was difficult what I studied, and too many classes I was taking there too, and they gave me credit, but they would say you still need this, still need that. I was as I think in a letter that I something that I wrote to you, I tried all the colleges, from Florissant Valley and in Merrimack and St. Louis University and St. Louis and Washington University, University of Missouri, and I graduated from University of Missouri's honors. And I was in the first class that graduated from St. Louis Community College, and they were here at Union Station. And one well-known journalist was the keynote speaker. I forgot now his name, very prominent at the, prominent at the time.
What did you study then? Economics or
No, English. Economics, God forbid, economics. No, languages.
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 Okay.
So it was Spanish that was the easiest for me thing to do, even though I never studied Spanish before. But I wanted to, for the first time, Russian. I did not Russian in Yugoslavia. I did Russian, and I was able to right away be interpreter for boxers of all the here the arena
boxers?
Soviet boxers.
Really?
Yes, I remember that. And but that was not my career because again some coincidence happened. I was going to go to graduate school and major in got possibly PhD in Spanish. And then I had another child, so I stayed home. And meanwhile, they asked me from St. Louis Community College if I could, if I would start a program for Croatian, because according to their, yes, polls, most of the students, not most, but great number of students at that time, that was in early 70s, were of Croatian descent, Polish and Croatian, besides being English, German, Irish. Mm. There were those two. So they had a Polish lady studying Polish, and they asked me, and I was not prepared to study to teach Croatian, but I did so much teaching myself about that that I compensate for that.
Well,
and it was wonderful. I
career. You developed your own curriculum, right? You wrote
your
own textbook because there probably was nothing.
Yeah, there was nothing. There was nothing. And I did, and my husband helped me because he was an administrator and a professor at Florissant Valley.
Oh.
He was a dean.
Oh.
So he gave me hints what to do and how to do that and use different textbooks from Yugoslavia. And then finally, 20 years ago, I wrote a book, and my daughter was a co-author.
Yeah,
she did with the English side, yes.
And it's a very well-respected textbook, I understand.
Yes.
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah. Are you still teaching now?
No, I'm not, but I am doing translating.
Okay.
Translating mainly documents because so many of them want to become citizens of Croatia to have dual citizenship. So, and that is very tedious. That's something that I don't like. It reminds me of economics.
Yeah. Now, Croatia has been independent for about 30 years, and I wish we had time to talk about that, but we don't. But I just want to ask you, you just returned from Croatia recently.
Yes.
How has it changed from when it was part of Yugoslavia to now, from your childhood to now? Has it changed? Or?
Yes, it has changed. But at the beginning, there was euphoria that we couldn't believe it, like something that happened. It was a dream that it was didn't seem that we'll ever be realized. And then there were people who were extremists in that, and there are people who opposed that, who became Yugoslavs and wanted to slow down nationalism, but not necessarily in a good way, more in a very abrupt way and disrespectful way. And so there were all kinds of parties like that. And then we became a member of the European Union. And at the beginning, people thought, oh, maybe soon Serbia will get again, will be again in the same country. We haven't healed yet from this one. They are not yet here, and we are in the European Union just in time that war in Ukraine started. So we see that there is a good reason for protection. But what happened, it is so much more expensive. Croatia was very inexpensive for the first 10 years, 20 years. Now it is expensive, and the quality of food is not the same because all the restaurants are serving people who will never return again, the tourists. So all kinds of things are passed.
Are there a lot of tourists now?
Oh, my, yes. So much. I don't know. I forgot how many millions stayed in my city. I think about 4 million, and the whole population of Croatia is under 4 million now, which is almost a million less than on previous census 10 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, that is so sad. But it's declining everywhere in Europe. Yeah. In Croatia, 9%, 9.5% less than 10 years ago.
That's unbelievable. People are just emigrating?
Yes, they are going highly specialized, going abroad, physicians.
Okay.
And computer specialists. And then people have, like in all affluent countries, one child or no children, or at least, or at the most two. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
There's a lot of countries are losing population that way, too, I understand. Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for sharing your story with us. Looks like our time is up. The time has gone so fast, as usual.
It passed very quickly.
But thank you very much. I really enjoy talking to you and appreciate you coming in and sharing your story and teaching us about your country.
Thank you. I enjoyed it very much. Yeah.
You've been go ahead.
No, I think we are finished.
Okay. Right? Yes, we are. You've been listening to Stories of New Americans on News Talk STL. Thank you for joining us.
Stories of New Americans with Ron Clutho on News Talk STL.